The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as in a machine made of the material nature. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna was not the supreme knower, and his decision to fight or not to fight was confined to his limited discretion. Lord Krishna instructed that the individual soul is not all in all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, or He Himself, Krishna, the localized Supersoul, sits in the heart, directing the living being. After changing bodies, the living entity forgets his past deeds, but the Supersoul, as the knower of the past, present, and future, remains the witness of all activities. Therefore, all the activities of living entities are directed by the Supersoul. The living entity gets what he deserves and is carried by the material body, which is created in the material energy under the direction of the Supersoul. As soon as a living entity is placed in a particular type of body, he has to work under the spell of that bodily situation. A person seated in a high-speed motor car goes faster than one seated in a slower car, though the living entities, the drivers, may be the same. Similarly, by the order of the Supreme Soul, material nature fashions a particular type of body to a particular type of living entity to work according to his past desires. The living entity is not independent. One should not think himself independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual soul is always under his control. Therefore, his duty is to surrender, and that is the injunction of the next verse. Tameva sharanam gaccha sarvabhavena bharata tat prasadat param shantim sthanam prapsyasi shashvatam. O Scion of Bharat, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. Iti te jnanam akhyatam guya guyataram maya vimsasyaitharasheshena yathechchasi tatha kuru. Thus I have explained to you the most confidential of all knowledge. Deliberate on this fully, and then do what you wish to do. I would like to thank all of you for coming this evening and sharing your lives with all of us. Krishna explains in the Gita, Jejathamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamyaham, that as we approach him, he rewards us accordingly. When we share our life with Krishna, he shares his self with us. To the degree we hold back, God holds back from us. It is explained in this verse, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayesha arjuna tishtiti, that the Supreme Lord is seated within the heart of every living being. And he ultimately is directing our wanderings. When one is sincere about spiritual life, it is said by the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. The fact is, we can never find a genuine sadhu to teach us the way of spiritual life. all we can do is have a sincere desire. And we must manifest our sincere desire by our actions. We have to want it and we have to search for it. God helps those who help themselves. If we simply sit and wait for Guru to come, we may wait for many millions of births and still be waiting. Therefore, we must express the sincerity of our desire for self-realization by associating with saintly people, by inquiring submissively, by trying to understand what is a spiritual master, what is a sadhu, what is the goal of life, who am I? And when those desires from within the heart are witnessed by the Paramatma Sri Krishna, then he reciprocates and he directs us to the lotus feet of one who can show us the path back to Godhead. In this regard, there is a beautiful story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a famous story that you have all heard. It is the story of the illustrious son of Maharaj Uttanapada, whose name was Dhruva. One day, when coming into his father's royal court, desiring the loving affection of his father, he began to climb upon his lap while his father was seated on the royal throne. At that time, the stepmother, Suruchi, when she saw this, she could not tolerate it. She said that my son is Uttama, and I am the favorite queen of the father, the king. Therefore, no one has the right to ascend the throne of the king unless they are born of my womb. And Dhruva, who was very much hurt by these harsh words, he looked to his father. But his father, due to bearing too much affection for his wife, said nothing. So Dhruva ran to his own mother, Suniti, and he could not talk. He was trembling like a leaf. Tears were flowing incessantly from his beautiful eyes. The child was only 5 years old. The mother, she understood that she was in a helpless position, because it was a fact. Her husband was partial to her co-wife. So she told Dhruva that I can do nothing for you, but God, he is all great, Bhagwan, Narayana. Whoever turns to him and takes shelter of him, all their desires are fulfilled. Actually, Suniti was a truly honorable person. Factually, Krishna says in Gita, Suhrada Saravadehinam, that I am the true well-wishing friend of all living beings. If we think we have the power to help anyone in any situation of life, we are in grand illusion. And if we make people believe that we can help them, we are cheating them. We are misleading them. There is only one person who can help anyone, and that is God. That is Krishna. And whatever our situation is in life, this is the facts. A real guru, he never teaches us simply to take shelter of him. He teaches us how to take shelter of God. Taking shelter of him means following his example and his instructions to turn to God. The guru claims not to be God. The guru is the transparent via medium. That person which brings the light of God's mercy into our life. Because of his pure surrender and service to the Lord is manifesting through him. Our own Guru Maharaj, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, when he came to America, he was simply encouraging everyone, chant the name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And many of the devotees, they were thinking that he's telling us to chant the name of Krishna, but actually he is Krishna. There's no difference. And then Srila Prabhupada taught us a verse, Pranam Mantra. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Which means, I offer my obeisances and I surrender to my spiritual master because he is very dear to Krishna, having taken shelter of his lotus feet. One who surrenders to Krishna, one who cleans his heart and cleans his mind of all ulterior motives, save and accept the desire of God. God, the Supreme Bhagavan, manifests himself through that person. Through that person's love and devotion. Just like a mirror, if it is full of dust, all it does is manifest dust. But when a mirror is perfectly cleaned and polished, then the sun reflects and gives light through that mirror. So similarly, the Paramatma, that is seated within the heart of every living being, beside the Jivatma, the individual soul. Because the individual soul's consciousness is covered by the dust of separate independent desires. Therefore, all we could manifest to the world is all of this dust. And that is all that we can perceive within our own hearts. Cheto darpanam marajanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. But when that dust is cleansed, when our hearts become pure, like a mirror, we can reflect the infinite sunshine of Krishna's grace to give light to the world. And that is what guru means. Someone who has cleansed his heart and who is 100% one in desire with Krishna. To become one with God means to have no separate interest in the will of God. When we are sincere, and when we seek such association and such guidance, then Krishna, by his kindness, from within the heart, directs us. So Dhruva Maharaja's mother, Suniti, she was actually taking position of what is called the Varkma Vadakshina Guru, one who first introduces someone to spiritual life. She didn't say, I can help you. Only God can help you. My help is only to show you the way to God. And any honest living being will accept this position in his own life. Huh. So Dhruva, he was very anxious to understand God when he heard this. Ah, my dear mother, so where will I find this God? She spoke very honestly. That is, from what I have heard from great authorities, that many, many great souls have gone to the forest to find him. Dhruva Maharaj, his qualification was his determination. He was so determined to seek out God that nothing else mattered in his life. He did not consider convenience or inconvenience. He didn't consider popularity or unpopularity. As a 5-year-old child, not knowing where he would sleep, where he would eat, who would protect him, he went into the forest. He didn't know where to go, how to go. He was simply going with a burning determination that I must have Krishna. And this determination is the most important consideration in our spiritual life. Krishna says in the Gita, Satatam kirtiyanto vam yathantascha drita vrita. One who always chants my name and one who takes a determined vow, drita vrita, to him I am always manifest. He is a great soul. What does it mean to be determined? Dhruva Maharaj exhibited by his example. He was fearless. How many of us, when it comes to spiritual life, were so much afraid, what if I lose some of my conveniences if I turn to God? What if people think that I'm going overboard in this spiritual life? They may criticize me. They may joke about me. Such tiny little things. We're so afraid because we have no determination. Dhruva Maharaj went into the jungles alone in the days and in the nights. That is the necessary qualification to follow in the footsteps. And because of this great burning determined desire, the Lord within his heart sent the great sage Narada Muni to that place. Who would imagine Narada Muni to happen to show up in the middle of the jungles? You see, there is no material impediment for one who is serious about spiritual life. Krishna takes control. And when Narada Muni came, he tested Dhruva. Why don't you go back home? Why are you taking this insult of your stepmother so seriously? Why don't you just tolerate all this? Dhruva Maharaj said, no. You may be saying all these things, but I have come here for a specific purpose, and nothing will dissuade me. You see, when devotees following in the footsteps of Dhruva seriously want spiritual life, it is the duty of the spiritual master to test him, to make sure he really wants that. But Dhruva Maharaj would not go home. So then Narada Muni initiated him. He told him to go to Madhuban, a holy place in Braj Mandal. And there he told him to perform tapasya and to always chant the holy name of the Lord, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which was the Mahamantra in the Satya Yuga. So there Dhruva Maharaj, for so many months, his austerities were ever increasing. For some time he was only eating the leaves that were falling from the trees. At long intervals he was only taking a little portion of water. And ultimately, every month he was only taking one breath. And he was only a 5-year-old child. This was his determination. And by the grace of his spiritual master, he completely purified his consciousness, and Lord Narayan appeared before him. And when Lord Narayan appeared before him, first he appeared inside of his heart, and Dhruva Maharaj was feeling the great pleasure of seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. But then that Lord disappeared, and Dhruva opened his eyes, and he saw that same Lord in his heart standing before him. And Dhruva was very anxious to offer prayers. But he was only a 5-year-old child, and he was uneducated. He didn't know any Sanskrit grammar. He never studied poetry. He had a desire to glorify the Lord, but no capacity to do so. But once again, the Lord, Sri Krishna, Narayana, he wanted to demonstrate that if you simply have the desire, Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana pariupashate, I will preserve what you have, I will carry what you lack. And Lord Narayan took his conch shell and placed it on the head of Dhruva. And upon that touch, Dhruva Maharaj, his intelligence was filled with all knowledge of Vedanta. And he began to compose perfect Sanskrit poetry in the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even to this day, so many yugas, millions of years later, the greatest scholars are studying, relishing, and learning from the prayers of this 5-year-old illiterate boy, Dhruva. What does this mean? This means the Lord is not concerned with your material qualifications. He is only concerned with your sincere, determined desire. There is no impediments. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripatam aham bandem si gurum dinadharanam. The spiritual master and Krishna, Paramananda, they are one and the same. In the same mercy is coming through Guru. It is said by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, even if you are a lame man, you can cross over the highest peaks of the Himalayas by foot. Even if you are a dumb man, you can speak the most beautiful, eloquent, precise poetry. And even if you are a blind man, you can see the farthest stars in the heavens. There is nothing impossible for one who gains the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And how to attain the mercy of Guru and Krishna? Simply, we must endeavor with a determined vow and a sincere heart. And Krishna, he will provide whatever is required for us to perfect our lives. So Lord Narayan asked Dhruva that what you have done for me is such an exalted thing. Now I know you want a kingdom greater than your father's. I will give you. You ask me for anything you want. Dhruva Maharaj explained that I have approached you with a material desire. But through chanting your holy name and witnessing your great beauty, now all of these things of the material world, which meant so much for me, they have no meaning. They have no significance. He said, I was looking for broken pieces of glass but by your causeless mercy I have found the most valuable diamond. How important this lesson is of Dhruva Maharaj to all of us. All the aspirations that we are striving for so hard in this world are nothing more valuable than broken pieces of glass. And the infinitely valuable diamond of God's grace, which is present right within our own heart, we are to such a large extent neglecting. There is a famous book in the Western world. It was a book about a man who was told that he had a great inheritance. And he was living at home in a very, very poor, poverty-stricken condition. And he left his home. And he traveled far and wide throughout all the country, throughout all the world, seeking his inherent wealth, his treasure. And through his whole search, traveling, struggling, striving, searching, he died. And then his children, they happened to find that the treasure he was looking for was right in the backyard of the house he was living. He left it, looking everywhere, but it was right at home. This is the condition of human civilization. We are all seeking peace. We are all seeking joy. We are all seeking the treasure of great pleasure and happiness. But we're looking for it through the broken pieces of glass, of the temporary objects of the senses. And we are neglecting that invaluable, precious jewel of Krishna, of God, who is seated right within our own hearts. So Dhruva Maharaj told Lord Narayan that I do not want anything from you. I have already, by seeing you, by tasting the sweetness of love for you, all my desires are fulfilled. And Lord Narayan said, yes, that is true. But at the same time, you have responsibilities. You are the son of the king. You are meant to be the next king. You go home and you do your duty. You accept the kingdom of your father. But don't accept it for any other purpose except the loving service of me. This is the perfection of life. Dhruva Maharaj went home. By that time, his father, who was so guilty, thinking his five-year-old child has gone into the forest, such a dangerous position, when he returned home, Narada Muni, he arranged with King Uttanapada that there be a grand reception. And shortly after, he was made the king. He was a self-realized soul, perfectly liberated in pure devotion. But because it was the will of God, he didn't stay in the forest. He assumed the responsibilities. Not only that, but the daughter of Varuna, whose name was Ila, was married to him. And he had a son, and he had a daughter. But for what purpose? Not like the average person. He was not thinking, this son and this daughter and this wife is mine, let me enjoy. This kingdom and this power is mine to maintain and to preserve. No. Dhruva Maharaj always remained in a spirit of a humble, humble servant of the Lord. I'm accepting all these things, my Lord, because it is your desire. Some people think if you become too serious about spiritual life, you become ineffective in responsibilities of this world. But Dhruva Maharaj absolutely refutes this argument by his own life. It is described that one time his beloved brother, Uttam, was hunting in the forest. And a band of yakshas, whose residence is a place called Alakpur in the Himalayas, they attacked him and they killed him. And also Uttama's mother, Suruchi, she also died. Now, although Suruchi was the one that insulted Dhruva so much, he was such a forgiving and kind-hearted person. A devotee of the Lord is so forgiving and so kind-hearted upon any offense to oneself. But as king, it was his duty to uphold justice. It was his duty to punish sinful and envious people. And how thorough he performed his duty. When Dhruva Maharaj heard this, he became very angry. And he also, it explains, he lamented. Now, some people, they think that when you become spiritually advanced, your heart becomes like stone. Dhruva Maharaj, his lamentation and his anger were not because of unfulfilled sense enjoyment like ours. He was angry because, on behalf of God, he had to uphold justice. And anger was the tool by which he could pursue his duty as king in this regard. And his lamentation was that naturally every devotee of the Lord has a soft heart. And although through transcendental knowledge and realization he understands that the soul is eternal, still he feels separation from those intimate associates that are worshiping and loving God along with him. So Dhruva Maharaj boarded his chariot and he attacked the city of the yakshas. He took his chariot high to the Himalayas, to the area which is said to be now the area of Tibet. And he blew upon his conch shell with such force that the yakshas became very frightened, and they came out with their weapons to attack Dhruva. And how did they attack? They started covering his body with bows and with arrows and with lances and with bludgeons and with swords. And it's described that Dhruva was like a mountain peak completely being covered by heavy rains. And the demigods and all the great sages who were witnessing this, they were very much alarmed and afraid, thinking Dhruva is being devastated by these demons. But it is not like that. It is described by the great acharyas who comment on the Bhagavatam that just like on a mountain peak when storms of rain come, it appears that the mountain is completely obscured by that heavy torrential rain. But the fact is, what is really taking place is the rain is cleansing all the dirt and all the soot, all the impurities from the mountain. And when the rain ceases, because rain is temporary, all that's left is the shining, pure, clean, unblemished glory of the mountain. So in the same way, when we take to spiritual life, we should know that tests will come upon us. Sometimes they will be overpowering. Sometimes the attacks of material energy will come upon us so strongly that it practically obscures our spiritual consciousness. But if, like Dhruva, we simply maintain our faith, then all these tests only serve to further purify our hearts and our minds. And when Dhruva shone through, he was so bright and brilliant. Then he started shooting his arrows, three at a time. And the Yakshas, they were becoming very much defeated. By the tens and thousands, they were dying. Their heads, their limbs were being severed by the mighty arrows of Dhruva. And finally, they became so frightened that those who survived, they ran away back into their city. And Dhruva, being victorious, he came into the city and he saw that no one was around. It appears that he conquered and everything was his. But Dhruva Maharaj did not trust the Yakshas. He was thinking that they are very, very clever. They must have some plan. This is also a very important principle for those who are aspiring in spiritual life. That Maya is very clever. We should never trust her. Even if we appear to be victorious in controlling our senses, even if we appear to be very, very successful in our spiritual endeavors, even if it appears that we have conquered and resisted all of the allurements of material energy, we should never think I have won. We should always know that Maya is very clever. Material energy is very, very thorough in testing us. So Dhruva Maharaj was simply waiting what is going to happen next. One who seeks conquest in spiritual life should never be complacent. The opposite of determination is complacency. It is the greatest disease in human society, spiritual complacency. And who dares to claim that this disease is not within our own hearts? Krishna tells Arjuna that give up this lethargy and fight. Complacency means that everything's all right. I remember our Guru Maharaj, he used to tell us that I am simply praying to Radha and Krishna that I do not fall into Maya. Because Maya is everywhere. In this world, an intelligent person knows that Maya is just around every corner, ready to attack. And then he said, not only is she around every corner, but even when you're approaching the next corner, she's halfway down the block waiting for you there too. She's everywhere. Therefore, Dhruva Maharaj was a true devotee. In this great battle against the demoniac forces of the Yakshas, he didn't think that he was successful. He didn't think he was conquered. He was alert and awake. So I want to speak a few minutes about this subject of spiritual complacency. We have explained that it is the greatest disease in human civilization. We think everything is all right. We think if we pay God off by doing a little puja, then he will protect us. We think if we come from a good birth and we follow certain moral principles, then our life is good. And there's no need, really, to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. There's no need to discipline our lives for spiritual purification. There is no need to regularly associate and seek the shelter of saintly persons. Because after all, I'm not hurting anybody. And I'm a good person. And I have my television, and I have my car, and I have my house, and I have my family, and I have nice food, so everything's all right. This is called spiritual complacency. We must have a determined desire to make our spiritual realization, our Krishna consciousness, first and foremost. We should know that this complacency is being defeated by Maya. So therefore, Dhruva Maharaj, he was not complacent. He was ready. He had conquered the whole city, but he was ready. And a few minutes later, the Yakshas, who had great mystic powers, they created a grand illusion. All of a sudden, in the sky came insurmountable clouds, which made everything dark. And from those clouds, electrical lightning and thunderbolts were flashing in all directions. It was a terribly fearful scene. And then torrential rain started falling. Not only rain, but hail. And then from these clouds, blood, pus, mucus, trunks of dead, mutilated bodies were all showering down all around Dhruva. It was a terrible scene. And then Dhruva saw, right in the sky, a large, huge, immense mountain appeared in the sky. And from that mountain, swords, lances, arrows, bludgeons, clubs just started showering by the billions upon Dhruva. And then he heard the sound of the ocean of devastation. And there before him, he saw a huge tidal wave coming to completely usurp all of creation. And from all sides, there were poisonous cobras and snakes and serpents, lions, tigers, and mad elephants all rushing at him. And insane, mad rakshasas. Because of this situation, Dhruva became bewildered and perplexed. You see, even though he was such a great self-realized soul, he is still a jivatma. Still, without taking shelter of the association of saintly persons, even in the most advanced situation, you can be bewildered by devotee, by Maya. Therefore, we find the greatest of all saints. Why are they so great? Because they never give up the lotus feet of the great saints. our Guru Maharaj, whatever situation took place before him, he simply took shelter of his Guru Maharaj. That is the perfection of life. So Dhruva was temporarily bewildered and perplexed. They said to Dhruva, this is a very overpowering scene of illusions created by the Rakshasas. But if you just chant the holy name, then it'll all disappear. So Dhruva chanted the holy name. Then it all disappeared. And then he took his arrows, and then he started really firing. And he just started just creating havoc in the whole Yaksha dynasty. He completely was annihilating. And at that time, Swayambhu Manu, he descended, Dhruva's grandfather. He said, Dhruva, that is enough. You have done your duty and beyond. After all, it was only a few of the Yakshas that killed your brother. You have killed all of them. That was your duty as king. But the rest are innocent. And besides, he said, do you know that the Yakshas are all descendants of Kubera? Who is it? He said, do you know that the Yakshas are all descendants of Kubera, who is a dear relative of Lord Shiva? And Kubera is the treasurer of all the devatas in the heavens. Do you know what an important and powerful position he has? He's in charge of the wealth of all the heavenly planets. So you should not offend him by killing all his children and grandchildren. So, upon hearing this and many beautiful instructions by Swayambhu Manu, Dhruva Maharaj, he stopped his fighting. And he let all the rest of the Yakshasas live peacefully under his responsible rule. And at that time, Kubera came. He was very grateful. And when Kubera stood before Dhruva, Dhruva, with folded palms, offered his obeisances to this great devata. Devotees are always humble. Self-realized souls are always anxious to offer respects to others. So Kubera, he told Dhruva that because you have so kindly forgiven all of these Yakshas, my descendants. This is the proof of your illustrious quality of love and devotion to the Lord. And because I am so satisfied with you, I want to grant you the fulfillment of any desire you have. You ask for any benediction. Know that I am the treasurer of all the gods, and all the wealth of the heavens is at my disposal, and I'll give you anything you want. Now, let me ask you this. If Kubera came to you and said that I will fulfill any desire you have, ask for any benediction, what would you ask for? Think about it for a second. You could ask for a planet. You could ask for a golden mansion. You could ask for freedom from disease. Upon yourself, your family members, for the rest of your long, long lives. You could ask for a life of millions of years in complete opulence and luxury and comforts with nobody ever bothering you. He could fulfill any of these desires. What would you ask for?
Dhruva Maharaj, he said, "My dear Kuvera, I only have one desire, and if you could fulfill this, that will be my great happiness. That I may always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Sri Narayan. That I may never forget him in any circumstance in life. And that I may always have the opportunity to render humble service to the Lord and his devotees. Grant that I may always have that, which is the ultimate treasure, the greatest wealth in all of existence." And that benediction was bestowed upon him. Dhruva Maharaj, he performed his responsibility as the king of the world throughout his life. And when he put his son on the throne, who was responsible and qualified by the good training of father, he was ready to leave this world. And it is described at that time the Vishnu Dutas came on a beautiful celestial airplane and told Dhruva that now you come back to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. Whatever you have done in your life has done in the, been done in the loving service of the Lord. You have raised your family in the loving service of the Lord. You have performed your social and moral obligations in the loving service of the Lord. Therefore, your life is perfect. Now it is time for you to give up this body and come back to the spiritual world. And what was Dhruva thinking? Dhruva said to the Vishnu Dutas that I cannot go. Because what about my mother? If it wasn't for her, I never would have approached Krishna in the first place. How could I leave her behind? A devotee is always grateful. Someone who does a favor to a devotee, that devotee will never forget that for his whole life. And he will always be anxious to tell Krishna whatever anyone has done to help me in my spiritual path. So the servants of Narayan, they told Dhruva that you look there. And he looked in the sky, and there he saw that the celestial servants of Lord Narayan had already welcomed his mother on a celestial plane and was taking her back home, back to Godhead, Vaikuntha. Today, people are very afraid that their child is going to become too involved in spiritual life. Such crazy insanity is below the dignity of the people of Bharatvarsha. According to the culture of Bharatvarsha, the success of a parent is only measured by how much their son or daughter is surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord's service. And if they haven't done that, no matter how successful they are at picking up the broken pieces of glass that's ultimately going to just cut their hearts, you failed. Miserably failed. That's all. Your duty is that your children become pure devotees of God. And if you don't assume that duty, you have failed. You have cheated them. You'll have to answer to God. God does not care how much good food you've fed their bellies. He does not care how much good clothes you've put on their dying bodies. He's only concerned with one thing, have you revealed to them the true treasure of everlasting peace? If you haven't, you are a disgrace in the eyes of God. And Dhruva Maharaj, he showed that when a son or when a daughter becomes God's pure servant, he guarantees that the parents will go back home, back to Godhead. He will not leave without them. This is also the case with Prahlad. He was also only 5 years old. He was asked a benediction. He said, I desire nothing but your loving service, my Lord. But if you force me to take some benediction, then please take my father back to Godhead. Give him liberation. This is real human life. This is love. So how to create this transcendental spiritual atmosphere in our life? That is the first and foremost question we must pursue the answer of. Do not allow spiritual complacency to become like fog and cover your real purpose. Yova etadakshadam gargiya vaditlashmal paraiti sakripana. That one is a miserly, miserly man if he takes this rare human birth and wastes it not realizing God, but quits his body like the cats and dogs. And of course, self-realization doesn't come by performing a little puja. That's nice. It doesn't come by just giving a little charity. All the scriptures and all the saints explain it comes when we are determined to seek the shelter of saintly persons and learn from them how to surrender our lives in the loving service of the Lord. In whatever situation we're in, whether we are doctors, whether we are farmers, whether we are businessmen, whether we are politicians or kings or housewives or students or sannyasis, there's a need for every type of occupation in the service of the body of human society. But the greatest need is that we perform our duties like Arjuna, like Dhruva, in that determined spirit of devotion to Krishna. Seeking the advice, seeking the counsel and the direction from the great souls, and receiving their mercy, and sharing that mercy with those who are near and dear to us. That is the Siddhanta of all the Shastra. Bahunam janmanam mante jnanavam ampabhadyate vasudeva sarvamihi samahatma sudurlabha. Krishna says, after many births and deaths, sometimes we're born as untouchable sudras, sometimes we're born as hogs, as serpents, as mosquitoes, sometimes we're born as malechas and yavanas, as Americans, as Europeans, as Africans. Sometimes we're born as Saraswat Brahmins in India. There are so many births. Krishna says, after many births and deaths, one who finally comes to the point of real knowledge, he surrenders to Vasudev, knowing him to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Vedaishta sarvera hameva vedyo vedantakrit veda vedeva chaham. It is described in the Bhagavatam. Samsidhir haritoshanam. Whatever one's caste, whatever one's occupation, whatever one's ashram is not very important. There's only one important thing. The bottom line, the conclusion of our life is, have we pleased Krishna in our life? Have we endeavored with determination to please the Lord? That's the only thing that's considered at the time of death. God is not concerned with the superficial material conditions. He's only concerned with our heart. Have we aspired and strived to please Him, to surrender to Him? Vasudeva sarvamihi samahatma sadurlava. If you have, Krishna considers you mahatma. And what is the greatest way to please the Lord? To always remember Him with love. And in everything we do, it should be offered in love. Yat karoshi yadashnashi yajdahoshi tatapsiya. This love is our natural condition. To remember Krishna is the natural propensity of the soul. That remembrance of Krishna for one moment is more valuable than all the things of this world. Not for a vacation, because the whole atmosphere is conducive to remember Krishna, to remember Bhagavan. The association of going to the temple is simply to help us remember our relationship with God. But the most convenient, accessible of all methods of remembering Krishna is through the chanting of His holy name. God is none different than His name. God has many names. Krishna means the all-attractive one. Ram, Narayan, Narasingha, Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh. These are all the transcendental sound vibrations of God's name. By sincerely chanting the holy name and associating with those people sincerely chanting the holy names, we can always remember Krishna. We can perfect and purify our lives. But there has to be a determined desire and a determined endeavor in this regard. So let us really seriously consider, in the short span of time we have in this human life, which is gradually being reduced with every breath, with every heartbeat, we do not have so much time. Let us strive for the highest thing. Let us give the greatest gift to our loved ones. The gift of Krishna consciousness, love of God, which is so easily acquired through chanting His names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Is there any questions?
Story you are saying that by chanting Hare Krishna, chanting the name of God, you know, that total mystic power, whatever is created by Yakshas, that was all over. Or you said finally we can solve all the problem by chanting Hare Krishna. Now in this material world, you are giving such a wonderful solution and such a simple solution, it is hardly to believe. Otherwise, if it is that true, then why people should waste so much of time going to so studying so much of Vedas and Puranas, or this and that, and doing lot of things. And it's difficult to believe that by chanting merely Hare Krishna, we can solve all the problem.
What do you learn through studying the Vedas and the Puranas? What you will learn, the conclusion of the Vedas and the Puranas, is that in this age of Kali Yuga, Haranama, Haranama, Haranameva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatirangyata, that there's no more sublime method than chanting the holy names for the perfection of liberation.
Factually, that is all that is required. But to convince others, we should study the Vedas and the Puranas. And to fix our own consciousness with firm conviction, so that we will take the chanting of the holy name seriously, it is important to study the Shastra. But factually, the essence of all Vedas is the holy name of God. The Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the final word, the last statement of Shri Vyasadeva, who's the compiler of all the Vedas, he ends the Bhagavatam by explaining that in the age of Kali Yuga, by chanting the name of the Lord and offering obeisances and humility to Him, we will achieve the perfection of life. That is the conclusion. In the Ramayana, it's repeatedly confirmed that the name of Ram is all that is required. In the story of Dhruva Maharaj, simply by chanting the name of God, he realized the absolute truth. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya upadrita. In the age of Kali Yuga, we are very less qualified spiritually. Therefore, the Lord has so kindly made facility. He has made an exception in this whole age that you have no good qualities, really, that are worthy of the dignity of my expectations. But if you simply chant the holy name of the Lord, I'll take you back. That is His kindness. Therefore, it is said in the Shastra, Kalera dosha nide rajan asti heka mahan guna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangha paramraje. That this age of Kali is an ocean of faults. But there's one benediction in this ocean of faults. That anyone who sincerely chants the name of Hari will attain the complete perfection of liberation. It is also said in the Shastra that the greatest sages, they worship Kali Yuga. More than Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, or Dwapara Yuga. Why? Because in Kali Yuga, the Lord is so kind that He allows you to attain the highest perfection of liberation just by chanting His name. In Satya Yuga, Valmiki Muni and others, they had to meditate for 60,000 years in complete celibacy, in complete seclusion. Who can do that for even 60 days in the age of Kali? But you can get the same result and more by simply chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the great Acharyas, they extract this essence from the scriptures. And they so mercifully give it to us. What about our children? During the kirtan, all the children were here chanting. Sometimes they dance. But during the lecture, where are they? They're not here. I don't see any. When it comes to philosophy, they go away. But they can attain the supreme perfection of life as quickly as the super intelligent adults. Maybe even more. They just learn how to take shelter of the holy name. Any other questions? And we are very honored to be here. Our dear friend, who we have really very much learned to love and respect over the past year, Mr. Chandrakant Belari. He is celebrating his 60th birthday. And I really, truly mean that he's He's a very wonderful example for all of us. Not only a very pious man, but a deeply religious man. And on this auspicious day, I would like to offer my prayers to the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna, that he may further bless him and guide him with more and more sincere determination on the path of bhakti. And I would like to ask all of you to give a person a gift. We give people watches, or in America we give men ties, or we give them some jewelry or some food. That's a nice gift. Those types of gifts must be exchanged just to show our love. But above and beyond that, the real gift is our prayers. Our heartfelt prayers to the Lord to help guide and protect our friends to come closer and closer to His divine love. So I request all of you to very kindly petition Lord to show His kindness and mercy to Mr. Velari this evening. And such a wonderful example that most people, when it's their birthday, they're expecting so much from us. But He's giving. It's not an ordinary birthday. He understands very full in His heart that the greatest treasure and the greatest gift and the greatest charity is divine knowledge, transcendental knowledge of the absolute truth. And the greatest gift in this age of Kali Yuga is the holy name. So He has invited all of us so that we will all be given by His kindness knowledge of the absolute truth and the supreme gift of the holy name of the Lord. And this is really a wonderful example for all of us, how to give the greatest charity and how to use any good excuse to give this charity. Whether it's a birthday, whether it's an anniversary, of course these things are related to the material body, but we're in this world. So we can take all of these apparent material facilities to use it as an opportunity to give in charity something that is really great, something that is highest. Devotion and knowledge to Krishna, to God. And we have all come here for this reason tonight. So we are very thankful. May Krishna bless you.
Thank you very much.